With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello everyone. This is the Talk Eastern Europe podcast. My name is Maciek Makulski.
And my name is Adam Reichert. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast and welcome to episode 24. This episode is a part of the special series, which is co-sponsored by the Polish Embassy in Tbilisi, Georgia, currently acting as the NATO contact point in the country for 2019 and 2020. And I do need to point out right away that the opinions and views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the Polish Embassy in Georgia, NATO, or the Polish Ministry of Foreign Affairs. But we are very grateful for their support and very glad that we are able to continue to cooperate and discuss broader issues of the Southern Caucasus region to you and with you, our podcast audience. I also want to remind our listeners out there that the first episode in this series was an interview with Dominik Jankowski, a security expert in Brussels, and was published as Talk Eastern Europe number 22. If you haven't heard that episode yet, please do check it out. Dominik gives a really good overview of the current security risks in the region and an up-to-date account of the role that NATO is playing in the Black Sea region.
And before we begin this episode, I would like to encourage our listeners, as we usually do, to check out our Facebook group for Talk Eastern Europe. Please feel free to join it and engage with us there. Also, we have a new goal for our Patreon platform, and I don't want to hide to our listeners that Adam is much more enthusiastic about it than I am. Adam, do you think we will reach that goal? What is it, first of all?
We will see, but I set up the goal. Our next goal now is to get 20 patrons. That's only 7. We know that there's more than that many listeners out there. To get them by January 2020, and I didn't put an exact date, so it could be January 31st, 2020.
Then do you think, is it realistic?
Yeah, I think it's a realistic goal. I think it's also important to recognize our listeners who have supported us.
As always,
thus far. So let me just say hello to David, Dennis, Elizabeth, Erica, Jason, Janos, Caitlin, Mark, Pierre, Sophia, Stephanie, Steven, Wilhelm. They have all donated a small monthly amount to keep this podcast running, and we are very grateful to them for that. Also, there are benefits for being a supporter. So not just a shout out on the podcast, which I hope you all enjoy, but also if you support us, you get the first notification of the podcast. And those who donate $10 or more get a free PDF copy of the latest issue of New Eastern Europe. And in fact, I just sent out the latest issue to our active listener patrons. So I hope that they are enjoying the read.
That's right, and this is a great benefit, I hope. I do strongly suggest taking a look also at the latest issue of New Eastern Europe, which has the theme of new old faces, a true makeover or cosmetic change, with a question mark in the end, which includes profiles, debates of the region's newcomers and old faces, with a question of whether or not this is a trend towards a new quality in our region, or rather an upgraded version of the same.
Yeah, thanks, Maciek, for the recommendation. I just would say if listeners would like, they can head over to www.neweasterneurope.eu for more information on the newest issue of NE, as well as previous issues that are available. And speaking of recommendations, I also highly recommend that you check out our sister podcast, In Between Europe, which is available also on the New Eastern Europe website. Their latest episode discusses a new report from our friends at Visegrad Insight, titled European Futures, and looks at the current state of the EU budget negotiations and the impact for regional politics on the economy.
I think they have now similar number of episodes as we have, right?
They just finished number 23. So with this episode, which is our 24th, I think we're just passing them a little bit in the race.
Still, these are our colleagues, but it's better to be in the lead, I would say.
Well, definitely check them out.
Yeah, sure. As Adam said in the beginning, Georgia is back in the news, and this is our topic for this episode. Recently, demonstration erupted in Tbilisi. Again, I would say it was last week, with several people being arrested during a protest blocking the parliament. I think, Adam, even in time of our recording this episode, some protests are taking place in Tbilisi. So let me say that the recent phase of protests came after Georgian parliament failed to pass an electoral system reform to move its system to a full proportional representation, which was an agreement by the government after this summer's protests demanded, protester demanded these changes and some other changes.
That's right, yeah.
And for those who are interested in learning more on Georgian politics, I do suggest checking out the most recent issue of New Eastern Europe, which has an article about the summer protests, as well as you can check episode number 17 of our podcast, in which we had a discussion on the social frustration in the country. Having said that, also, Adam, I would like to ask about your some very recent personal experience, because you just got back from Tbilisi. How do you see the situation there?
Well, it is an ongoing issue. There is certainly a high level of frustration with the status quo in the country, which this is something I certainly felt from different people that I had discussions with. But it's getting less and less attention in terms of media attention, and now I think maybe with the protests you'll see more attention going on Georgia. But on the outside, actually, the economy looks good and is growing. But from the everyday Georgian's perspective, a lot more work certainly needs to be done by the government to meet the social needs, including high unemployment or underemployment in the country. I think wages are a serious issue that are not addressed and have not been addressed for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also the problem, of course, of Georgia's big neighbor to the north, Russia, which we've talked about a lot on the podcast. And this is also the reason which actually launched sparked the protests back in June. The images of Sergei Gavrilov, the deputy speaker of the Russian Duma, of him sitting in the Georgian parliament speaker's chair, really caused an outrage and an uproar in Tbilisi. And for many Georgians, this was just basically unacceptable.
Also, as we are discussing security in the Black Sea region, we shouldn't ignore the situation with the frozen conflicts on Georgia's territories. As you mentioned, Russia, Georgia and Russia have essentially been at state of a, let's call it, Cold War since 2008, when the two countries had an open conflict in August for 5 days. And in the aftermath of that short war, Russia officially recognized the self-declared republics of South Ossetia and Abkhazia,
right,
and has been informally supporting their regimes ever since.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we do cover the issue of frozen conflicts in the region extensively in New Eastern Europe. But we would like to discuss in particular in this episode the so-called South Ossetia or Tsikhinvali region, as it is called in Georgia. Mm-hmm. From a security standpoint, it is particularly important because the region, which is unrecognized, as you said, Maciek, it is basically under occupation by the Russian Federation, and it's not that far away from the Georgian capital of Tbilisi.
Yeah, what the Georgians felt in 2008. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, that's right. And I was on the highway when I was traveling from Tbilisi to Batumi. They have a part of a highway, at least between the two cities. Mm-hmm. And in one section, you can actually see the border. Well, what they call the administrative boundary line, ABL, because there is no official border between the region and the territory controlled by Georgia. But you could actually see the line there, and it's usually marked by a green fence, or it's monitored on the breakaway region sides by the Russian FSB. So it clearly shows that the Russian authorities have a certain level of control in that part of the territory. And I think what is very concerning is that over the last few years, the Russian authorities have slowly moved this line further into the Georgian-controlled territory, and this has been one of a really big issue that is in the Georgian discourse, especially when we talk about security.
Yeah, there is even a term for that. This is so-called borderization policy or creeping annexation.
That's right. Yeah,
and it can certainly play a role not only in Georgia's security policy or its delicate relation with Russia, but also has a negative impact on Georgia's Euro-Atlantic aspirations, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it's also part of the problem, I think, and this is some of my reflections after coming back from being there for about a week, is that the issues such as these are ones that are not talked enough about in the Western media. And this is part of our mission, of course, as the podcast of Talk Eastern Europe and also on the pages of New Eastern Europe. It's to shed more light on the issues that are faced by the people and the societies of the region. So I do hope that as part of this podcast, we're able to raise greater awareness among our listeners who are around the globe and get them to understand better what is happening here and there on the ground.
And also for that reason, you had a special guest for the interview for this episode?
That's right. Yep, that's right. When I was in Georgia, I interviewed Yegor Kuroptsev, who's actually, he's Russian. He's a Russian activist, but he's been based in Georgia since sometime after the 2008 war. He is head of the Free Russian Foundation's Tbilisi office, and does projects which aim to promote a better understanding of the Georgian point of view amongst Russian-speaking audience. And we discussed during the interview the current events surrounding Russian-Georgian relations, as well as the issue of the so-called borderization, as we had just talked about. And he touches on some very shocking situations where I think a lot of us are not fully aware of, where every day normal people are kidnapped or go missing as a result of this frozen but very much active conflict.
That's probably something what is missed very often when we discuss politics in general, this more social aspect of it, if I can call it like that. Anything to add, Adam, before we go to the interview?
I don't want to give too much away. So why don't we go into the interview now with Yegor Kuroptsev, who is a Russian activist based in Tbilisi.
Yeah, let's listen to the interview now.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
With me is Yegor Kuroptsev, who is director of the Free Russia Foundation here in Georgia, and who has been
very much involved also on Russian-Georgian relations, particularly for several years, from what I understand. Yeah. So thank you very much for joining me. I would like start maybe with a question about current relations between Georgia and Russia, because we've had a very hot summer in relations, particularly with the protests, which were sparked with the member of Duma who was sitting in the speaker's chair. How do you assess first the reactions of both the Georgian authorities and the Russian authorities, and what do relations look like today after this kind of explosion in the society?
Thanks a lot for covering this topic. It's very important, at least for us in Georgia. It's very, very important, the most important topic. We daily face the problem of so-called Georgian-Russian relations, because I would say that there are no relations between these two countries, and you know that there are no diplomatic relations between these two countries. So what is really important, that 20th of June, you said about the protests in summer, it was not some kind of a really big, I don't know, surprise, because in Georgia, the country lived 24 hours, 7 days a week, discussing occupation of Georgian territories, discussing so-called borderization, creeping annexation of Georgian lands, meter after meter. It happens for how many? 11 years already. So the war didn't over in 2008. It still goes, but like not publicly, unfortunately. In Georgia, it is in every, I don't know, news material, on all TV channels, radio channels, everywhere, 24 hours a day. But unfortunately, it's not going out like wider for European audiences, American audiences, and etc. So Russian propaganda, of course, is much more effective, and they have much more resources to distribute false. So what they do, for example, and why this 20th of June protest seen like something big and something, I don't know, new, it's because of different kind of discussion processes, discussion platforms used by European Union with Georgia, with Russians, and etc. And the headlines of news for last, I don't know, 10, 11 years mostly was about some new kind of cooperation in economics, new kind of cooperation somewhere, I don't know, trading. So this is the most important and most effective tool used by Russian propaganda, because in Georgia, 24 hours a day, it's about kidnappings, killings, stealing of lands, and maybe once in 6 months, it's about trading or economy. But outside, it's only like mostly Russian headlines, Russian reality is distributed for wider audiences in European Union or somewhere else. So the 20th of June was just logical continuation of Georgian protests against the occupation of Georgian territories.
So you weren't surprised?
No, I was not surprised at all, because we all knew, we like people who work on this topic. I'm working on this topic for, I don't know, 7 years, I believe. And I'm not a journalist, by the way.
Sorry.
It's not a problem. Yes, some people, I have media projects my own, so people just say about journalism, but it's not a journalism. We are like working politically to try at least somehow to cover what's going on in Georgia for this exact audiences outside, and in Russia as well. Because without Russian people at least understanding that it was a war and occupation still goes on, and they don't know it, it will never change. So we were not surprised, of course, about this protest, because no Russian state representative cannot even come to Georgia without the mission to discuss the occupation of Georgian territories. So it's impossible. We all knew that there will be lots of protest activities, and it will be huge. More than that, we have like groups in Facebook and other social networks of activists, of actively involves people, political experts, and etc., discussing all the topics connected with Russian hybrid war against Georgia, Kremlin's, I don't want to say Russian, Kremlin's war. We have these problems every day. We can see it and discuss daily what's going on behalf of the Kremlin in Georgia, daily. So we have these groups discussing, trying to counter it some way, trying to arrange some counter activities. So when we heard about the visit of this Gavrilov from Russian State Duma, of course, some counter activities were discussed. Of course, politicians, especially from the opposition, they said that it's impossible and we will do something, and they did. And of course, activists, we have lots of anti-occupation movements in Georgia, very effective, very active, very young and talented people, I don't know, future of the country, let's say, who actually started all of these protest activities, mm-hmm. and it lasted for 3 months, as you know, after. So for Russia, for Russian government, for Russian politicians, it was a huge surprise to see thousands of people protesting against Kremlin there in the center of Tbilisi, because luckily or unfortunately for me, they didn't know in reality that Georgia still lives discussing it. They didn't know that the protest is so huge. Even they knew that they're doing very bad, aggressive stuff mm-hmm. every day. Mm-hmm. And after this Karas and Abashidze discussion platform, there is official format of discussions about Georgia-Russia relations. Karasin, the deputy chief of Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Russia, he wrote reports after these meetings all the time. And of course, they discussed just economy and some kind of, regular stuff. So for administration of Russian president, for example, people in charge of Georgia and the region, it was not so clear that such kind of huge protest activity will appear. Mm. For Georgian authorities that allowed Mr. Gavrilov and his delegation to come to Georgia, it was clear. And of course, for them, it was profitable to let him in and to show Russia, Russian government, who tried to push Georgian government, that, sorry, guys, we have the whole population of the country against you. Mm. And in this way, they really showed it. Unfortunately, there were some other internal problems after. Maybe you've heard about bad behavior of police during the protest. But, what we have to say, we have to divide first relations between Georgian people and Russian government, and Georgian government and Russian government. Mm. Because for Georgian people, 100% actually. Yeah, of course, we have some little groups of people supported from the Kremlin who are acting as their supporters and promoters in Georgia. There are very high-level politicians supported directly from the Kremlin, media companies, I don't know, activists, everything. But if you go to the major question of occupation, and if you go to, for example, you say to them that even these pro-Kremlin guys, tomorrow your territory will be deoccupied, let's do something, they will. Mm. Because business is business, but homeland is homeland. So for 100% of Georgian population, Russian government is the first and only enemy, is the first and only threat, daily threat. And this, for example, researchers, and for example, NDI, National Democratic Institute, or IRI, ask about support to the NATO, to the European Union, mostly it is about confrontation with Russian government and Russian army, because people are afraid of them. Mm-hmm. And people every day wait, that something may happen. And actually something happens every day, but they don't know about it. And as for the government, it is another story, because this government, current government of Georgia, they don't want to have any problems with anyone. They want to have silence everywhere. They want to do business, sometimes exactly their business, mm-hmm. not country's business, mm-hmm. but it doesn't matter. They believe in some balances in this topic, and such balances in reality, when you go, for example, to occupation line, and it's occupation line, not some ABL, not some border, it's occupation line. When you go there, you may see that Georgian police is minimum 500 meters away, and even when Russian FSB troops kidnap people, and just for your audience who cannot understand the real situation, according to official contract, this so-called South Ossetia and Abkhazia are so-called protected by Russian FSB forces, mm-hmm. not their forces,
not
but
military.
Russian FSB forces, border guards, border yeah. police, and etc. But it's under
not locals,
FSB.
It's,
yeah,
Russian.
Yeah. And the head, for example, of so-called South Ossetia is not some kind of so-called parliament. It is a very not so-called real chief of local KGB, mm-hmm. who is a former FSB officer. Mm. It's always like this. For many years, they change from time to time, but it's always retired FSB official. And this is a real ruler of this territory under Moscow, directly with contact with Moscow. So when you go there, you can see that, unfortunately, Georgian government do not protect this territory. If you ask them, they will say that we don't want provocations, we don't want to like have a new war, and etc., etc. But in reality, it's not true, because some activists, for example, like Georgian activists, they go to occupation line, they just stand there when FSB engineering forces come to build new fences. Mm-hmm. They stand there without any guns, without any, I don't know, anything, even knives, and they say, no, we will not let you go further. We will not let you build fences deeper inside of the Georgian territory. And they just stop and leave. It happened two times. Mm. Unfortunately, not many times, only two times. But it happened. So what we see that the price for Russian government, for people in charge with this situation, the price is very low. That's why they still keep moving this occupation line deeper and deeper and deeper. This August, in the end of the August 2019, we were about war for just one day, but it was a very, very tense situation. Mm. We didn't sleep the whole night, and in the morning, we didn't know what will happen. Actually, you can mention, it wasn't mentioned in any media, but I have facts. I cannot provide you, but maybe I'll just show you some pictures after. The private army of Russian Federation, maybe you've heard about it, it's Wagner army, their members were sent to so-called South Ossetia in August, and we had facts, we had photos, we had pictures, and etc. So what it means that the new politics that Russian government started since protest activities, since August, when they realized that the situation is not so clear as they thought, as in Armenia, by the way, a year ago, a year and a half already, before changing of the government. Right. So they have new policy, and their policy is clear. They are trying to ensure European community, international community, that it's not Russians, it's not bad Russians who are fighting against Georgia. It's not bad Russians who keep occupying new and new territories. It's some Ossetians. So what they do exactly is very clear. They when we have lots of meetings every month, about two times a month already, meetings between Georgian side, Russian side, and European observers. So and so-called South Ossetian representatives as well. So on these meetings now, since August, it's very like important for European community first. What they do, Russian delegation come there and they make surprising eyes, saying that South Ossetians, but not Russians, are trying to keep occupying new lands. They made South Ossetians discover some new map of 1922. This map was not negotiated by any part. So after 2008, after the war, European Union monitoring mission, Russian side, Georgian side, they have a map with occupation line, and we all know where is it. Well, not directly, not exactly, but we know. This time, starting the August, Ossetians discovered some new map where part of half of Georgia, about half of Georgia is South Ossetia. And they said that they will move occupation line throughout this territory, like Mtskheta. It's a small city near Tbilisi, old capital of Georgia. Mm-hmm. Borzhomi, very famous resort. And the strategic road from Tbilisi to Batumi, another very well-known resort, Georgian resort. So they started saying that they will build new occupation lines, and this territory will be so-called South Ossetia. And Russians, during these meetings, they make surprised eyes saying that these Ossetians are crazy. We are not supporting this. For who? For Europeans. Uh-huh. For European observers to report home that, guys, Russians are not so bad. They're trying to help somehow. They're trying to negotiate some like peace processes. Of course, everyone understands that it's a Kremlin behind the process because there are no South Ossetian government or something. But
so it was all one show, basically.
Yeah, for sure. Our favorite European friends, really favorites, really like strategic partners, supporters, and etc., they enjoy this process. Because, for example, we know some countries of the European Union that love to cooperate with the Kremlin a lot. So when their guys from such a meetings report home that Russians are fine, Russian delegation, this peacekeeper, I don't know, peacemaker trying to help, and etc., they say, oh, very, very good. So next time maybe we will talk to Zelensky. Zelensky will change prisoners with Putin, and then they will sign Steinmeier's formula. And then maybe the Kremlin and Putin will not be such a big threat for us already, and maybe we can start decreasing the sanctions. Wow, it's awesome. So what Russian government do at the moment in Ukraine, in Georgia, it doesn't matter, is Kremlin's image laundry, let's say like this, and they succeed. What we see, they really succeed. Because, for example, you can remember the last General Assembly in New York. No words were said, almost no words were said, as it was before many times, about Putin, about some occupation, right, about some annexation. We discussed during this assembly, we discussed talks between Trump and Zelensky. We discussed meeting of Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov with Zelensky when they briefly talked about the peace on Donbass, peace again. And the first meeting ever after the war between Georgian and Russian foreign ministers without any kind of observers, yeah? So Russia and Russian government was, covered as some country and the government trying to solve some regional problems.
Showing is that the Kremlin looks at these things in a holistic point of view, where the West, particularly the European Union, looks at these things as pieces, right?
So yep.
They come, like you said, they come back after these meetings and say, oh, the Russians are doing what they can to help.
Yep.
Now we should trust them in these other areas, like Donbass.
Yeah. Now we should decrease the level of sanctions.
Right.
This is the final goal, actually, because Putin can say that sanctions is not a problem every year, but of course it is a huge problem for the economy. It is a huge problem for him directly and for his people around him. So this is a final goal. For little Georgia, so again, government, unfortunately, not very effective. That's why you, for example, or your colleagues in European Union or other.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Countries, they don't have enough information. The information you must know is very, little and clear. For 11 years, till nowadays, till today, exactly, Russian government, Russian troops, FSB, are still in Georgian territories meter after meter. This August and September, they moved deeper, the first time ever, 4 kilometers and 300 meters deeper in the Georgian territory. When we say that they steal meters of the land, maybe it sounds like not a lot, but then you see the square meters, and it's parts of somebody's lands. Mm. People live there. It's not just a land. It's a land where people live right now at the moment. So,
and what happens to those people when they...
They just lose territory, or they lose some lands where they can put some, I don't know, tomatoes or some some other vegetables, and et cetera. They're farmers.
How does the government react to this? This is...
It's a very bad question. Let's pretend you didn't ask.
Okay.
Government reacts, they don't.
They don't.
Sometimes on some international platforms, they just must say something. Mm-hmm. That's why they say. But unfortunately for me and for like all active people in this country, the policy of Georgian government is very weak. Mm. They call it balanced, but mm-hmm. of course it's not balanced because we lose everything day after day. Mm-hmm. So it will be balanced if Georgian politicians would shout in every NATO and European Union capital about what's going on, will push and demand from European community, American community to implement sanctions for every step made against Georgian mm-hmm. sovereignty. What they do, for example, a month ago, Georgian government said that they don't want any sanctions because of the occupation of Georgia. So Ukrainian government demanded, asked, pushed, did everything to have lots of packages of sanctions. Mm-hmm. As for Georgian government, they just said, no, it could be a provocation, and we have to think about sanctions from Russia. Actually, we counted already many times what sanctions could be implemented from Russia to Georgia. It's tourism, it's money transfers, it's wine and sparkling water trading. It's not a big part of Georgian GDP. It's not a huge part. So it will be a problem for some short period of time. Then you have to just change your like direction of trade. You can trade with other countries. And it was like this 6-7 years ago. They were, at the moment, the dependence of Russian economy, here in Georgia, mm-hmm. is huge. We, like Georgia, all the time have about 1,000 or more Russian companies working in the country. It's not like something new. It was always like this. But at the moment, let's remember, 60% of all real estate contracts are with Russian citizens. 50% of foreign people in Georgia are Russian like citizens. It's not bad because these people mostly leave Russia because of political reasons. Okay. It's fine. What about business? It's a huge problem. For example, Anaklia Port, the hub that could be a very important economical project and political project mm-hmm. for Georgia, making it, the country, not only some small country somewhere, but the hub for many countries in the world to trade, to develop economy, and etc. So...
And this also had American investment.
It had American investment. Now there is some small company, but it's living as well. Hmm. And actually, it's very pure why this project is not moving on. It's not only, let's say like this, it's not because of the Kremlin. It's just made with hands of the Kremlin. Hmm. But of course, this Anaklia port is the biggest threat, not for Kremlin, but for China. Mm-hmm. And it's first small Georgia... Little Georgia became the platform of economical, fight between huge countries like United States, China, Russia, and etc. So, of course, Georgian government must develop this project. It is a must because it is maybe one of the only tools to move country forward. Of course, its influence of Russian government and, for example, this annexation and occupation and etc. is used to push Georgian government to do something, mm-hmm. different kind of steps in different directions. So when you see Russian FSB troops 1 kilometer, 300 meters, again, deeper in your territory, in your villages, and after they call you and say, guys, let's, for example, stop Anaklia port project and do something else, like another Poti port project, you have to think about it. Hmm. It's not only advice, let's say like this, because you understand that like after this, something new may happen, and you will lose new and new and new territories. But what we see these months, recent months, is European Community, United States administration, I will concretize it as administration, working, let's say like this, closing eyes for reality and trying to cooperate more with the Kremlin, because we all understand that money is there, not here. So they enjoy some of the countries, let's say like this, enjoying the process of Kremlin's image laundry and cooperating, helping them to succeed in this process. Because, of course, everyone want to, like, not everyone, but some countries want to like stop these sanctions, start working again, making business, bigger business, and etc. So for Georgia, of course, sanctions is the only effective tool to stop the occupation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For Georgia, sanctions like we have like about Crimea, Donbass, and etc., etc., sanctions is the only tool to make the price for Russian governments higher, because Georgia is not a Ukraine. Ukraine is a huge, anyway rich, maybe stolen, but rich country with many strategical, like for Russian government, strategical, I don't know, territories for military base, something like that. Georgia is small. Mm. It's not as important as Ukraine. So if there were any price for Russian government, they pay for any meter they steal, any person they steal, they will stop. Now there is no price. This is a problem. Yeah, not from European and American friends, not from Georgian government. The price is zero.
Mm.
For example, the other thing, okay, we stated about like losing territories again and again and again. People who live there on the so-called border near the occupation lines are being kidnapped. So every month we have about 2-3 people kidnapped by FSB forces. Some of them are like on their, like, as they say it, as the occupying regime say it, they cross so-called border, and this is a, like, they, like, how to say it? No, it's not, like, according to their law,
mm-hmm.
yeah? But, like, for international community, there is no law and there is no border,
right.
First. The second problem, that mostly these people don't even cross any kind of so-called border. They just steal them from Georgia controls territory and take them to this KGB and ask for money. It's officially 800 lari. It's about, how much? $400, I think. Something like maybe 300.
From the families? Or
from the families. Yeah. From the families. And families, you can imagine these farmers, families living in these villages. Georgia is not very rich country. In Belize, even, people live not very good. And you can imagine how people in villages live. They don't have any money, so they collect it from these villages.
Mm.
Only a few times during this 11 years, I remember when government paid mm-hmm. for people who were kidnapped. Usually, families collecting money from all relatives, friends, and etc., and they pay this 800, and they give them back. But this is the other story that must be covered for your audience, kidnappings. But sometimes they just kill them. This is another problem that mm. should be covered, must be covered. We had lots of cases like this during last cases. It's not maybe a lot, it's not a hot war, but this is maybe even harder to explain. Because, for example, in May, Irakli Kvaratskhelia, citizen of Georgia, just regular person, was fishing near his house, mm-hmm. near Abkhazia, and he was kidnapped, and he occasionally died the same evening in the KGB of Abkhazia. He had a wife, small children, and etc., killed. Exactly a year ago, before this happened, Mr. Archilte Tunashvili was kidnapped near so-called South Ossetia, killed in KGB the same night. They said he has a heart attack or something like this. But the body was given back to Georgia, and it was more than 100 evidences of torture.
Wow.
So yes, of course, it was a heart attack, we believe it. Exactly a year before this, Mr. Gigat Khazoria was just shot on Georgia-controlled territory on the bridge near Abkhazia. And he was shot by this guy who... border guard, border mm-hmm. security representative. We have video, and it was broadcasted on all TV channels. The killer is, like, he's free, no problems, he still lives there, and he's fine.
No justice.
For sure. No justice. Which justice? Russian justice. We know Russian government justice very well. He's just free. They said that it's not our problem. He's Abkhazian guy, and Abkhazia should, like, think about it. And, of course, they said he's not, like, in charge with this crime and etc. But all TV channels broadcasted video of this murder. So we have such cases. It's about maybe 5, 6, 7, 1 year in each year. Mm. It's maybe, like, not something really huge like it is in Ukraine, right? Because there is a hot war. But this is what we say. It's not a hot war here. People die, and there is no any kind of, justice, any kind of courts, right? Nothing. So Russian government do not pay any price, and this is the biggest mistake that still takes place after a war in 2008, when our even more favorite person, Ms. Taliavini, made a report about the war 2008, where she wrote that Georgia started military activities first. Yes, of course, she wrote 500 pages after this political conclusion, where she described the process, but even after Crimea, for example, they didn't have political will to write normal report stating that, yes, it is the Kremlin who is in charge of war, of occupation, who is after all of these processes, because this is the only truth. Mm. And Taliavini's report is used only by Russian state propaganda all the time. When any kind of question related to Georgia is on the surface, is discussing, they say, European guys also told that it's Georgian fault. This is the major, like, mistake that could be ever, like, made because of this war. And the problem is they're still doing like this. When you ask European delegation, for example, who started the war in 2008, they're bureaucrats. So they say, and that's it. They don't answer directly, but they know. So if you ask not publicly, of course, they will say that Kremlin, who else, yeah? Because in reality, everyone know that there were hundreds of provocations before 7th of August in 2008. They were just killing Georgian people in Georgian villages. They were just stealing these homes and etc., etc. And the army was staying already near this place, waiting to start the war. So it wasn't like some kind of surprise, and it was not, there was no chance that this war will not happen. It could be in August, in September, in October, it doesn't matter. So Putin wanted the war, he did it, because he knew that the price will be zero, and it was zero. He tested Crimea scenario in Georgia, and he succeeded, because Europe and France said nothing. Yeah, of course, they, like, said some words of support. Some of them even came to Georgia, and for this, like, the biggest gratitude to the European leaders who came to Georgia and supported the country exactly these days. But, of course, big not gratitude to Ms. Taliavini and those who covered this report and actually made it the only document after the war. This, like, still after 11 years, it is the huge problem of European bureaucracy and European not desire to break all ties with the Kremlin, to still work, to still have some business, and we see it now very well, as we discussed. This is the, like, the same process that started in Georgia in 2008. So if European Union, if United States of America, with this administration, this president, will not start helping in reality, but not only with statements, funds, and Georgia is very grateful, of course, for financial support provided from all international partners. It's very important. Lots of, I don't know, infrastructural projects, agricultural projects, institutions were developed for European and American money. Thanks a lot, again and again and again. But in regard with Georgian security, regional security, and Black Sea security, the only way, of course, is a real help, real confirmation that the war was started from the Kremlin side. real confirmation and discussion daily on all international platforms what's going on occupation lines right now, still. And, of course, sanctions, which will be very, very effective here. It's not so effective in Ukraine, because Ukraine is a much more important topic for Putin. Mm. But it will be very effective here. And even maybe if European Union, Americans, and all other friends of Georgia do not see some kind of demand from Georgian government, if they cooperate, if they're friends of Georgia, not the government, they must listen to voice of Georgian people and maybe demand from Georgian government to do some steps. It will be very effective. It will be a real strategic partnership and friendship from my point of view.
Well, let's hope that this podcast also will be helping to raise awareness among our listeners and readers, and also push the Western audience to learn more about what's happening here.
Thanks a lot to you for covering this topic.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. That was the interview with Igor Kuropatiev. We hope that we gave you a bit of context what is going right now in Georgia and between Georgia and Russia. So that's basically it what we have for you for this episode. It was the second episode within our special Georgian series, and I think Adam, correct me if I'm wrong, there will be two or three more, and we should finish this series within, I think, 2-3 weeks. So
that's right. And I also want to thank the Polish embassy in Tbilisi for their support of this podcast. We're very grateful for the support. We do have planned at least 3 or 4 more episodes yet in this series. And I think once we complete the series, we'll put together a small page where you can just listen to the whole series as its own, kind of as a standalone, if you're interested in putting a whole picture together of security in the Black Sea region.
Maybe even we will do some package. We will recommend also some texts from New Eastern Europe. Also, I think still our episode from June about protests is still an important part of the context of the situation in Georgia.
I think we'll add a link to that episode in the notes for this one, for sure.
Okay, so thank you everyone for listening. That's it for today. Stay tuned, and until next time.